Hey, everybody. Welcome to Comedy Film Nerds, episode 334.
It's pretty exciting. We're going to be talking about War Dogs, Kubo and the Two Strings, and some cool trailers, Arrival and Bad Santa 2. And we have another first-time guest today.
Yeah, we're clocking out a lot of first-timers. Mm-hmm. It's we're getting some newbies in the garage.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. Everybody seems to like your Black Cauldron poster. Yeah.
Why wouldn't they?
Of course, Chris. They should all like it. And then there was a discussion about gargoyles that
we had.
But we should introduce our guest because her podcast is in LA Podfest this year.
Yes, and she's also a Black Cauldron and gargoyle lover. So.
Here she is, Julia Prescott.
Hi. Thanks
Do you so go much. Prescott or Prescott?
Prescott.
Prescott.
However, I've heard Prescott, and it's always been like, whoa, you must be from Arizona. That's the conversation I have.
Yeah. Or they're just people that say Tuesday and
Tuesday.
Robit. And
it's very quaint, but man, what a great story. My life. Either that or I'll get Julia Gulia, which I have petered out since The Wedding Singer is no longer relevant.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I know.
Congratulations. Right? That's good business.
For once, I'm rooting for Adam Sandler's career. The Descent into Darkness. Oh, do you think that he's going to do a Christopher Nolan kind of thing where he'll still make grown-ups, but it's like Christopher Nolan's grown-ups or something? Do you think he'll
it's more of a warning. So I think it would be more useful.
Yeah, I think so.
So
gotta get some mileage out of that Netflix deal.
Yeah, because Netflix isn't.
His download numbers are insane.
I know. I was going to say, I think if we crunch the numbers, it's actually quite well.
He's doing crazy numbers at Netflix.
Yeah.
He crashed their servers on one of them.
Well, not to talk about a previous episode, but, you know, if we know anything from the Suicide Squad box office numbers, taste is not a factor in this matter.
That is true.
Yeah.
And you always wonder, too, like, all right, well, everyone who wants to see it sees it immediately, and then no one else sees it.
Yeah, right. The rewatchability of it is
zero. Oh, yeah. In fact, I was reading like the articles for these superhero movies have such high budgets and such high marketing budgets that they actually count on to make their money back people seeing the movie in theaters multiple times.
Oh, right.
So a lot of times, if that doesn't happen, the movie is no chance of making its money back.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a weird thing to count on. You know, people seeing your movie multiple times in the theater.
What should just be a fluke.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, like that's like, okay, well, every once in a while a movie comes along that people see multiple times in the theater. But it shouldn't be something you count on.
We can't all be Titanic in the 90s.
No.
I mean, or, God knows we've tried.
Or Dark Knight or the first, the Marvel movies have that kind of, people go see them multiple times, but it's not like Dark Knight. I mean, you know, when we see movies like that or like a Star Wars, you know, you count on people seeing it multiple times. But, put that in your budget, really?
Suicide Squad
presumptuous.
Still made $262 million.
That's crazy.
And it's not close to making its money back when you add up like what the budget was to make the film and then the crazy marketing budget that they put behind it. It's still like behind. Just it's still going to be a write
Jared
down.
Jared Leto's Manic Panic budget.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Now, overseas, will it eventually make its money back? Who knows? But it's not going to be like that tentpole blockbuster that they were hoping for.
No.
It's been a pretty sour summer blockbuster season.
Yeah, it has been.
Yeah.
I mean, you had
After Civil War,
it kind of fell
off. Happened?
It really hasn't. There hasn't been
that other big giant movie. But, you know, you also wonder, too, how many big giant movies do you need per summer?
Yeah.
It's a question of like, do we need one every couple weeks? Some kind of crazy giant tentpole movie that stuff blows up in.
Right.
Like, it's like, you know, you have, you know, if you look at what came out this summer, you had Suicide Squad, Civil War, you had Batman versus Superman, and like Independence Day, like all in the same summer.
Oh, my God.
That's like,
I just remembered Independence Day came out.
And that never used to happen before. Like, you know, you would have Independence Day come out. That's the big summer movie.
Right.
You know, it was just then everyone would go to see that. But you don't, you know, now it's like we're getting deluged with visual effects.
I know.
Every summer.
And it's all the same kind of movie. I mean, it's a tired conversation, but every other movie seems to be a superhero movie at this point, and that there are no more mid-budget movies that are being made. Like, you know, if Miramax was just starting out right now, it would just fail completely because, you know, they're not making Pulp Fiction right now. Mm-mm. They're just making, you know, these like...
There's $5 million movies and there's $200 million.
Yeah, that's
movies.
A shame.
And there's no in between.
It's that we really need to bring those... I don't know how we would, but I don't know. I mean, they really need to reanalyze like... the marketing and the budgets for those kind of movies, because we're losing those mid-range movies that are so great. I mean, you could honestly, you could have made a Suicide Squad movie for $40 million.
Yeah.
And it could have been kind of smaller and contained and more interesting. But, you know, like, no, there has to be $100 million in special effects. Or it's like, why would we make it if it doesn't have $100 million in special effects?
Yeah, and there's a ton of pressure to get the marketing out so early.
Right.
And the marketing for that film, the comedian Dave Child wrote a very funny tweet about it where he said something like, man, they really shouldn't have adapted that Suicide Squad trailer into a movie. I think that was their first mistake.
I talked to a trailer editor, too, like... The guys like that were trying to put those together, like it was some crazy, insane, like 4 or 5 hour cut originally of the film.
Yeah.
And it got cut down, then everything had to get reshot because everyone liked the tone of the new trailer with the, that was trying to be Guardians of the Galaxy. Uh-huh. And so then there was all these reshoots, and people are saying it was so bad before this, and this is the trailer editors, so I can neither confirm nor deny the actual cut at the end was better than where it was.
Yeah,
that's even like, I'm like, really? That's so, it was even less coherent before.
There has been some standouts as far as like more indie level movies this summer, like Hunt for the Wilder People was really great. Did you guys see that?
I didn't see that one yet.
And I don't know if this counts. I think it came out before the summer, but Green Room was fantastic.
Oh, so yeah, I missed that one.
There's a lot of stuff
one.
You can see at like the Arclight, but nothing blockbuster.
I've heard those things, and again, like I talked about it last week, with Hell or High Water was a really cool movie.
Oh, yeah, that's getting great reviews.
It was fantastic. So there's like those, but again, those are only at sort of art houses.
And they have no marketing budget, and a lot of times they're in that weird middle ground where you can't find them at theaters. They're not... being marketed really that heavily, and you can't find them on demand. Like those types of movies are perfect for like that dual release. Yeah, it's in a couple theaters, but if you can't find it, it's on your cable right now. You can get it.
Dual release for movies like that.
Yes,
now.
You should. I think. I think they're shooting themselves in the foot if they
absolutely,
because if you don't have, if the budget of your movie is $10 or $12 million or something like that, you need $30 million in marketing, and if you don't have that, then then you should go VOD, because that's because then you're going to get social media buzz, and people are going to just download it or watch it.
You have to rely on social media and word of mouth. Yeah.
It's the Wild West out there, and I think that studios are just now, I mean, how many years into social media being a very useful marketing tool? They're just now opening their minds to it.
Yeah.
And I think that VOD as just like a standard, like, we're just going to do this. If this is the budget for this movie, then it's officially an indie movie. We're just going to do VOD. It's a smart way to go, always. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about your podcast that'll be in the Los Angeles Podcast Festival. Everything's coming up. Everything's coming up. tell us what it is, who's in it, how long you've been doing it.
So it's a podcast that I co-host with my friend Allie Gertz, who's a very talented comedian and musician. And we interview people about their favorite episode of The Simpsons. And we've been doing it for about a year and a half. And we've had a mix of, you know, comedians like Jonah Ray, Matt Myra, Ben Schwartz. But then also we'll have people that have written on The Simpsons come on and talk about their experience, which has been the coolest. We had Tim Long, Mike Scully, Josh Weinstein came on twice. First, he came on to talk about, gosh, I can't remember. It was a Selma episode. But then the second time, he really wanted to talk about the Poochie episode. So he came back and we were like, sure, Josh, whatever. And he's the best dude ever. He's just so eager to like tell behind-the-scenes stories. And you can just tell that he's still a nerd for The Simpsons. And it's really refreshing. And we've had a ton of people on. Matt Selman and Dana Gould. And we're excited to be a part of LA Podfest, and our plans are to, you know, pack the house with some of our best guests and talk about you know, different episodes, or maybe we'll play some clips. We're still like fine tuning what the program's going to be. But, you know, if you're a fan of The Simpsons and you just want to hear people make a ton of references to it over the course of an hour, that's the podcast for you. If you want to hear some of your favorite comedians or up and coming creative people talk about their favorite episode and how it inspired them to do what they do, we have that as well. And of course, if you want to hear some behind the scenes, you know, what happened in the writer's room in 1994, what Conan is really like, and, you know,
what's Conan really like?
Pretty much exactly how you imagine it. From what I hear, he's pretty straightforward in how he's always been. But what's been really eye-opening for us to discover is that I think that there's some weird, like, fan belief for The Simpsons that, given that James L. Brooks was so involved in the development of the show, and Sam Simon in developing the tone and the style and the comedy of it, that I think a lot of people diminish Matt Groening's involvement with it past just the basic inception of the idea. Mm-hmm. But we've learned he had the idea for Who Shot Mr. Burns, basically. We learned that he, you know, called Josh and Bill into his office and was like, I want to do a Simpsons episode that's a playoff of Who Shot JR, and do you think you can do that? And, you know, they both were like, yes, of course. And then they turned back into their offices and were like, we don't know what the hell. Yeah, that's been really eye-opening. And hearing people that I've personally admired for being like just titans in TV writing, like Mike Scully talking to us about how when he first started writing on The Simpsons, he felt completely inept, and he had like that total phony syndrome that so many of us have when we get our like first big break, or just when we work professionally in like a creative area at all. But he said that for the first month he kept calling his wife and being like, don't buy anything, I'm getting fired, like I just know I'm gonna get fired. This was fun while it lasted, let's just take the free waters. And, yeah, you know, I'm gonna order fancy lunches until then. I'm gonna get fired. And then of course, you know, he went on to become the showrunner and has had a lot of success past The Simpsons. I think he's gonna do good things, that Mike Scully. but yeah, it's been really great just to hear these people that, you know, I think anybody would agree are like the top comedy writers talk about their real experience.
I actually just had a lunch with a show I'm working on with a buddy of mine, and he brought in a friend of his who's been a pretty big showrunner on some giant sitcoms, and he said the same thing. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, for 15, 20 years, I was just always about thought this was my last day. Like, always, you're always going to think you're going to get fired. And this guy, he was like co-EP on giant shows.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, mega hit shows. And just still that, like,
that fear of
fire. Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know. Yeah,
because there is that whole thing of, like, as a creative person, you're never truly satisfied. Mm-hmm. So you're constantly pushing. And I think that kind of hunger is good on some level. On for mm-hmm. the most part, it's good. But I think that generally we're way too hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
And that, you know, yes, we could get fired, but that's not a death sentence. You know, people get fired every day as writers. You just move on to the next thing. Because
you know what? That's not even a saying. That's literally
what
people get fired every day as
absolutely.
Writers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the other thing, too. I think sometimes we forget as creatives is that we're always just going from job to job.
Yeah.
So even if you, you know, work on the thing for 12 weeks or whatever, then you're still out of work in week 13.
Feast or famine.
So. You know, you could even be doing really well on the show. Everyone loves you, and then, oh no, it got canceled.
Right.
So that's the other thing, too. You didn't do anything wrong.
Yes.
It's just, you know, now you're out of a job anyway.
Or listen, we just really don't have the budget to pay you.
Right.
And we don't want to, like, pay you less than everyone else. So maybe go home, Julia. Yeah. I wouldn't know. Thank you. I'm going to take this water.
Thank you.
I'm going to order lunch before I leave.
Well, awesome. Yeah. That's so, guys, LA Podfest, Everything's Coming Up podcast is on Sunday at noon.
With Julia's coupon code.
Everything.
Everything.
So if
easy to remember.
It's if you day passes are still available. The Saturday day passes are going quick. The weekend passes are still available, but those are going quick. We've already sold out two other tiers. And if you can't make it to Los Angeles, then you can watch all 40 shows. And yes, if you use coupon code EVERYTHING, then you save $5 and that show gets paid.
You'll get to see everything but the stand-up show. And then people are being booked for the stand-up show as we speak.
We're locking in acts for the stand-up show. So check it out, lapodfest.com.
I'm so excited for it. I was actually just listening to one of the other podcasts that's on the lineup. Favorite Murder.
Oh, yeah.
So
we're pumped to have that.
Yeah, I was Karen emailing Kilgariff with Georgia and was like, when are you on? And so I'm just going to book out the whole weekend and bounce around to different podcasts.
That's the thing. That's what when we first started this festival, that's what
stop
we
by
want.
The lab, be a guest on all the other podcasts too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Cause that's what a lot of us do. We're there the whole weekend. We make the rounds.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I was emailing George about. I was like, can I tell my hometown murder story? Yes. You don't even have, yes.
That's what I want, for people coming in to visit, especially from out of town, we love that there's like comics and podcasters and people hanging out all weekend.
Yeah.
That's the whole vibe.
The guys from Night Vale and are going to be there the whole weekend hanging out. And Rooster Teeth, and I don't know if all the guys will be there, but a couple of them will be for sure the entire time.
Yeah, we're there all weekend.
Yeah, we'll be there all weekend.
We can't leave.
Yes.
Yeah. I love festivals. They just always feel like, I mean, even though this is in the town that I live, but especially when it's like in another town, it always feels like a school trip when you're like in high school and it's like, Mom and Dad aren't here.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go out.
It does have that feel.
It does. Well, there's a lot of people like, we're partying up in my hotel room.
Like, come over here. Exactly. And it's just like three people hanging out on a bed.
With like a Diet 7-Up. A 2-liter bottle of Diet 7-Up.
Hey, that's a good Diet Soda. It's a quality soda.
It is. I like it. Crisp and clean. No caffeine.
I know. No caffeine. No, I like it. Remember those?
We just dated ourselves.
Yeah. And did a free ad.
Yes.
Yeah, that was nice marketing. I'm sorry. I was the one. I sparked that. But you know what? I was speaking from the heart. I stand by it.
So let's let our guest go first, and we'll talk about War Dogs.
Oh, great.
So what did you think of War Dogs?
not to lift the curtain too much, but this my appearance on this podcast was rescheduled a couple times, so I actually each time was staring down the barrel of another summer blockbuster that I was underwhelmed to see. So I had seen Star Trek.
Yeah, you can say Suicide Squad. It's
then,
okay.
Yeah, I almost saw Suicide Squad. Phew, missed that. But then when it came down to this weekend, War Dogs was the best.
I know.
Is that the word we're using? for this. The poster intentionally looks like Scarface.
Indeed.
So strike one. strike two is that I'm just learning this now, originally titled Arms and the Dudes. What's that about?
Jesse Eisenberg and Shia LaBeouf were considered star in the film.
Oh boy.
Wow.
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. So that aside, I will say that this film is perfectly serviceable. It did the job it intended to do. It is about two bros that are inept and go out to the Middle East to, you know, get a lot of money selling guns to the military, and they are, you know, purposely fooling other people into thinking that they're a bigger entity than they are, blah blah blah. And then Bradley Cooper shows up.
Now, this is like, you know, it always has that tag of like based on a true story. As you're watching this movie, were you thinking a bunch of times that never happened?
Oh, I mean, yeah, it was very formulaic. It just followed all the beats of, so, you know, here are these two guys and, you know, they're doing something that is on its face, you know, pretty despicable. They're, you know, Jonah Hill, of course, plays the sleazier one who gets Miles Teller into the game of, you know, selling guns to the military and pretending like they're these big shots when they're just a couple of 20-something kids, which, by the way, the fact that they're supposed to be in their 20s, come on, please. Come on, please, with Jonah Hill in this role. Come on, please. I mean, even though he has the spirit of somebody who is eternally 21, I wasn't buying it for a second.
Right,
yeah.
So that was the thing that took me out of it. Not any of the other bits of plot. I was just like, you please. And also, his face looked very leathery, which, you know, it takes place in Miami. They show him at, like, a tanning salon a couple times. All right, very funny. But, yeah, he just looked way too old for what it was supposed to be. One thing that I wanted to talk about. So we're supposed to be rooting for Miles Teller's character. Like, even though he's still, like, you know, guilty of doing these, you know, illegal things, he has this moral compass because he's got, like, you know, a girlfriend back at home and a young kid. And
oh, well, so that makes it all okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
War profiteering is fine then.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
if you do it for the right reasons,
he was pushed up against the wall. It's like, what is he going to do? So they paint it where, and I don't know if this is a part of the true story, but he's working as a masseuse in Miami Beach. And, you know, there's one scene where an older male client accidentally drops his towel. Oops. And so we get a sense of this happening all the time for this character. So we're like, oh, God, anything but that. You know, more profiteering, please. And so, you know, and he's giving us the narration. So we're supposed to be rooting for him. And I guess we are, like, you know, he doesn't seem like somebody who is, you know, like, really drinking the Kool-Aid apart from buying a Porsche and getting a loft in, like, a very fancy building.
Right.
You know, he seems like he's a good father, et cetera, et cetera. I will say that the woman they cast as his girlfriend is way too hot. Not believable for a second. She's also vaguely European. They don't really talk about, she's got an accent. They don't really mention. Her name is Isabella, so you can kind of connect the dots, I suppose.
Right.
There's one scene early on that I could not stand, and it just felt like a real, like, Blake Snyder beat sheet screenwriting 101, where it's after Miles Teller reunites with Jonah Hill at a funeral, and Jonah Hill is his childhood friend, and so they're seeing each other for the first time, and you know, I guess they were best friends. The last time they saw each other was in 10th grade, and his parents, Miles Teller's his parents, warned him to not hang out with him anymore because he's a bad kid. So this is the first time they're seeing each other.
So they were right.
They were right.
Yes. Ew,
listen to your parents, kids. And so this is the first time that they're seeing each other, and he, you know, brings him in basically to, like, what he's been doing and kind of sparks the idea. And Miles Teller goes home after the funeral. He and Jonah Hill had just smoked a ton of weed together, and he goes home. And there's a scene between Miles Teller and his girlfriend where she goes, "How was the funeral?" And he goes, "Oh, it was great." And she goes, "You're high right now, aren't you?" And he was like, "What? No, I'm not." And then she, in, like, her own kind of, like, busted, accented way, I can see it reading on the page of, like, and now she's trying to be playful so we can believe that their relationship is real. She goes, "Yeah, you know, I've actually got some ice cream in the fridge and some nachos and some burgers." And he goes, "What?" And she goes, "I'm just kidding." And that's the scene to show that, like, they have a relationship that's playful and that she's playful. It made no sense.
Just so stoner dumb. Food stereotypes.
Stoner food stereotypes.
Wow.
And then
studio note.
Studio note. Exactly. Yeah. Like, what do we know about this relationship?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to make it feel real.
Yeah. That she, like, she's not just some nagging girlfriend at home. That she, like, plays with him too. And
you got to add nachos to it.
Yeah. Literally the next, and it just fell so flat. It wasn't funny at all. It just felt like a studio note. And literally the next scene, she goes, "I'm pregnant." So that's all we know about this character.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I didn't see this. I debated on what I was going to see. I was like, do I see War Dogs or do I see Kubo and the Two Strings?
I think you chose correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we were talking about this too last week is, you know, Todd Phillips has Old School and Hangover 1.
Yes.
And that's it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of other movies that aren't good. Hangover 2, 3, Due Date. Like, this is not I'm not like, oh, the new Todd Phillips movie is out.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
And
I will say that, I mean, he seems to be trying with this one. It is very telling, though, that he's just like calling Bradley Cooper on speed dial and being like, right. Bro.
Come on.
Help me out. Help me out.
Yeah.
I'll let you wear a wig and glasses.
Yeah, whatever. I know, and the glasses were very distracting. They were like, yeah. I don't know if he actually wears prescription glasses, but they were really going for that extra detail, so it magnified his eyes in a way that was very unsettling. And he also had like pink eye in one eye the entire time. Maybe not full on pink eye, but there was a redness that I was like, is that a character choice and you're trying to like be creative? Which I wouldn't put past Bradley Cooper, because if we've seen the behind the scenes of Wet Hot American Summer, where he's like acting, like he's geeking out as an actor so hard just to be on set because it was his first job, then I know that he would have done that character choice. Have you seen that clip? No. Oh my God, it's so funny. So there's that documentary on Netflix right around the time when the Wet Hot American Summer series came out on Netflix. They were like, here's a documentary about the making of the first Wet Hot American Summer. And, you know, it's just like footage from a camcorder and something right. that they would have put on a DVD extra. And there's one clip where they're like talking to Bradley Cooper and they're like, so like, what's your name? Like, how are you involved? And he is just like, I mean, everyone here is brilliant. And it, as an actor, I'm just like so honored to be here. And he's just like geeking out so hard.
That's
like,
great.
He's like, I met the director and they just like seem like they have a really great like sensibility and voice. And yeah, he's just, and then you pair that with, I don't know if you've also seen the clip where he's in the audience for Inside the Actor's Studio. And he's like, similarly, like, I have a question for you, Mr. Penn. I just want to say I'm an actor, and I, yeah. Anyway, he's great, making some choices in this movie. But yeah, I would say that like this movie, it's not offensively bad, and it's not fantastically good. It's all right. Like pretty middle of the road. You never really lose the sense that it's like Hollywood trying to make a movie about the Middle East and right. about these like two like cool dudes like high-fiving and taking selfies or whatever.
Bro-ing their way through yeah. war.
They're seriously, they're bro-ing their way through a war zone. And so that's the fun that they're really amping up in this movie. And that's what they're selling. And, you know, like it works for what they're intending to do, but I didn't walk away being like, everybody, would see this movie. Though I did, I saw it at the Vista matinee. Got to get that cheap price, baby. And I saw it with my fiance Mike. And right before the movie, yelled out, "War dogs! Woof woof woof!" So I like to have fun. I like to have fun. I want everyone to know that.
So, Mash, big shout out to the Vista matinee crew.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Keeping it strong. It was the same weekend as Echo Park Rising. So, you know, it wasn't a full experience of audience,
so it wasn't a full screening?
It wasn't a full screening. Whatever word I was trying to say.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's. All right, Chris, you and I both saw Kubo and the Two Strings.
I saw Kubo. So do you want to go? Yes.
You
saw
go first.
Kubo and the Two Strings. I saw it actually. Interestingly enough, my daughter had no interest in seeing it. My wife also had no interest in seeing it, but my son was crazy excited to see it. Okay. So,
how old is your son?
He's 8.
Okay.
So Griffin and I went to see the movie, and let me just put a little background here for everybody. I have sat through Pete's Dragon this summer. Uh-huh. I've sat through Secret Life of Pets. So, and I enjoyed Finding Dory, but this movie I absolutely loved. It was fantastic. Everything from the story to the characters to the technological achievements. I thought, okay, well, it's kind of a Japanese story and there's some monsters and fighting, but it was full on like martial arts sequences in stop motion animation. And it was like unbelievable to watch because you're watching it. And you're thinking, you forget sometimes that you're watching stop motion animation because it's so smooth and seamless. And then when you remember and you're watching an elaborate sequence, you're like, oh my God, I don't even know how they shot that. Because yeah. I'm looking at the notes now and it's the boat sequence alone took 19 months to shoot. It averaged 4.3 seconds of film per week for 5 years. So this movie was really amazing. And it was a movie I was so happy to see because it was dark. It was completely unforgiving and melancholy in a lot of parts. And what I love about it is that it's such a difference between a kid's film and a family film, where it doesn't talk down to kids. It it treats, I mean, it's, the movie starts with, you know, the mother and the baby Kubo. They're in a storm and they wash up on an island, and Kubo is narrating, and he says, "My grandfather took something from me," and you see that he's missing an eye. And then it goes, and that's the least of it. And then the story begins.
Yeah.
I'm gonna see the shit out of this movie.
It's so fantastic on that level, because the one problem I had with it was in the middle, when the monkey character comes to life and they meet this samurai who's forgetful, that's done by Matthew McConaughey. They like kind of argue too much, and I was almost like, too cute. Go back to the
right.
Darkness.
Oh, yeah.
The bullshit. Go back to the horrifying. He's got these scary ants that are just fucking horrifying.
They want his other eye.
They want his other eye.
Well, this studio, Leica or Leica, however you pronounce it, they fucking go for it.
Yeah, man. They do.
They're so good.
It's
They're based in Portland. They're based in Portland.
I knew that, yeah.
And their first movie was Coraline, which was fantastic, and based on a Neil Gaiman novel, so you know it's how dark it was.
Yeah.
And then they did Paranorman, which I didn't love, but then Box Trolls I just saw, which was really cool, too.
Oh, yeah, I heard Box Trolls is great.
And this one was, but I think this... this and Coraline are probably my favorite movies that they've done. And, you know, they're a small studio. It's years between movies. I was reading that they're trying to, like, expand and get bigger and do more movies, but it's like, it's stop motion. It takes forever.
It could be the Pixar of stop motion.
Yeah.
They pretty much are.
I wouldn't be surprised if studios are circling around after this movie and somebody's probably going to buy them.
It was,
oh, absolutely.
The detail of it was so, it was so engaging. I was like, wow, look at the features, and you know, they kind of, it's sort of jumpy a little bit, but that was sort of like made it all the more fantastic in my opinion, because I was like, oh, they're doing 3D stop motion, this is awesome. You know, I've seen plenty of, you know, computer generated, and it's cool, and there's a lot of great, but that, like, this was, because the detail that you get, especially like the hair would be blowing or something, or the facial
expressions.
Yeah, exactly. And it really helps then tell the story. It's not just, it's not technology just for technology's sake. Mm-hmm. It really helps because this is sort of an ancient time.
Yeah.
So you feel like you're in an ancient time. You feel, you know, it would be like if you did this live action, if the director used...
It's like an old Japanese fable.
Exactly.
Right, right. And the fact that, you know, it's like real objects being used, I'm sure is never lost on you as you're watching it, where it's like almost witnessing a live action film.
Yeah.
Almost witnessing, like, it amps up, like, the truth of the story in your mind as you're watching it.
And it was really cool. And I
some cool Eastern philosophy things about storytelling and just loss and family. And there's some really cool stuff.
And
really cool stuff.
It was really
and nothing was sugarcoated, which was really cool.
No.
So it's better than Sausage Party. I just wanted, are we keeping
the poster for Kubo is better than everything involved with the final product.
Interesting. Have you talked about Sausage?
No,
I'm
haven't seen it yet.
Bag of shit.
I did. Oh,
was that bad? How bad was it?
I was so offended that, like, I saw it with a group of people. And they mostly work in animation, so we were all kind of being like, let's support animated feature films. Mm-hmm. I was so offended by it that, like, my head was shaking the entire time. My arms were crossed. I was, like, embarrassed for the movie, which is a hard sentence to say. And then after the movie, I was praying that nobody asked me what I thought, because I didn't want to bum anyone out.
Oh, wow.
But then I think everybody was in the similar situation. I left early. I had to run. And
so you don't know how it ended.
I just, no. From after the movie discussion. They were still hanging out. Let me paint the picture. My friends were still hanging out, and I said, I gotta go. And then apparently afterward, it was revealed that most everyone hated it and were too afraid to express that. Hmm. But in talking about, like, the length of time that it takes to make an animated movie, I feel like with Sausage Party, they, knowing how long it takes, half wrote a script and then just rushed it through... and then worked on other things, And I feel like, I don't know, there's a lot of burnout that's happening with people of like Seth Rogen's celebrity stature and Kristen Wiig's celebrity stature, where you can kind of tell when you watch their projects that they're busy doing other projects while they're making those projects.
Yes.
And that the heart isn't as present and they're not as hungry as, you know, those earlier movies. And that's what it felt like with Sausage Party. It felt like, we want to make a film that's very crass and makes a lot of really obvious jokes about food puns and end it in an orgy. And that's what they did.
I just, when I saw that, I was just like, wow. Oh God, how many, like, ooh, what are you, a pink taco? Like, are we just going to do that all goddamn day with this film?
I know. And you know what? I was sitting in the theater and within 10 minutes, I was like, I hate this so much. Why do I hate this so much? And then it dawned on me, Julia, you hated the premise of this. Did you think it would change?
Yeah.
But it got a good review on Rotten Tomatoes, and I guess I'm just so loyal to those percentages.
Don't be.
Yes, I'm.
I was talking about this.
We have a decent review on the site. Yeah. Rick Myers didn't hate it.
Wow. All right, Rick.
Very nice.
I was on a podcast. I was on the Death Squad Ice House Chronicles show Friday, and a bunch of people had seen it, and just their description of it made me hate it.
Were they praising it as they were describing it?
No, they were not.
And the controversy surrounding the animators aside, like, have you heard about that?
No,
I haven't heard that.
So apparently, it was a Canadian studio that made this, made Sausage Party, and apparently there was a lot of controversy around disputes of animators working overtime and not being paid overtime, and some sort of, word from the higher ups saying, hey, if you complain about working overtime, then you're out of here and your name is not going to be on the film, which is what happened to a number of animators.
That's been the news.
Boy, Runaway Production is great.
But one last thing about Sausage Party, not only did they make really cheap jokes about, like, sex stuff with, like, I'll put my wiener in your hot dog bun, blah, 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 but there's a lot of racist shit in it. And, you know, I think they tried to make a stance that, South Park makes of, like, well, we just make fun of every race and everyone's equal, but they do it in such a smart way. And with this, I was rolling my eyes immediately at Selma Hayek's taco character and all the stupid, obvious jokes that come with that, and like how she's
a
lesbian.
It just seemed so lazy. It seemed like they were sitting around smoking weed and someone we should do this. And then that was the amount of effort that went into it.
We said it before, is like, you don't have to make every movie Seth Rogen wants to make. You know, no. you don't have to make all of them.
I do. I will say, I think that it's cool that he wanted to do a project like this, that he wanted to make an R-rated animated film. And I think that that's, you know, really cool and innovative. There are some funny jokes in it. There's a story. I mean, I'll just ruin it, whatever. There's like a,
all right. Spoiler alert for Sausage Party.
The only people that can see the food coming to life is people that are on bath salts. So if you're on bath salts, you can see, you can communicate with
that
the
makes
food.
Perfect sense.
Yeah, and then there's also a Stephen Hawking character that is a chewed up piece of gum in a wheelchair that's very funny. But otherwise.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Well, guys.
Sorry for that tangent.
You heard it here first. Yeah. Go see Kubo and the
Exactly. Now, a couple other things I wanted to say about Kubo. One of them was when I went in, we went like Sunday morning, father and son. We went in and got our 3D glasses. We saw it in 3D too, because I really wanted to see like the texture and the distance and stuff.
I saw it in 2D and I feel like I should have seen it in 3D.
It was cool. There wasn't a lot of stuff coming out at you, but you could see like the depth and, which was really cool. And you could see like the textures, I think, a little bit more. But what was funny is the guy gives me the 3D glasses and he goes, well, they're still wet from us cleaning. We ought to wipe them. I said, what do you mean they're still wet? He goes, well, we didn't expect so many adults coming here without children to see this movie, so we didn't clean as much 3D glasses, because it was a lot of animation nerds and people that just really wanted to see the movie without kids. So there weren't that many kids in the theater on a Sunday afternoon to see this movie.
That makes sense for L.A.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to go, they were crying so much.
Yeah. And then the other thing I wanted to mention, I saw this online. If you're in Los Angeles or in the Los Angeles area, if you go to Universal Studios right now, they have a whole Leica Studios display where you could actually go see.
Where's this?
It's up at Universal Studios. Oh, yeah. Man. And you go, you see everything from Coraline, and it ends with all the stuff from Kubo. And I didn't know this. The skeleton in Kubo is like 16 feet high. Ah! It's a real giant puppet. I'm so fascinated. And they have it in the in the display.
Well, they kind of this isn't a spoiler, but during the credits of Kubo, they show a little bit of how they shot that big skeleton scene, and the real skeleton in the green screen room. It's like, it's so fantastic.
Yeah,
it's
I'm gonna run. Yeah,
and really, honestly, this is a like see it on the big screen.
Yeah,
don't wait for it to come out on DVD or whatever,
and
like VOD. Like, you know, see it.
And support really cool family entertainment and really cool animation. This is the type of movie support with your dollar. You have to, because it's not, you know, Pixar. It's not Disney. It's, you know, it's Focus Features.
It's not
and
Seth Rogen.
And it's,
it actually has been a good year for
granted,
animated films, I would say.
Yeah. Granted, it is underwritten by Phil Knight, who runs Nike, but still.
Does he have any money? Does Nike
ever? In fact,
Nike
it was
based
the
in Portland, not based in Portland, but they have a big hub in Portland.
Yeah. Well, his son, this was his directorial debut. He runs the company, Travis Knight. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, nepotism, but nope, I'm on board. This was brilliant.
I mean, too, like, he's been running this company that's done all these cool stop motion animation films. So he should direct.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was it's to support this movie. It's fantastic. It's really, really good. And it's, like I said, and if you've seen with your kids Secret Life of Pets and Pete's Dragon, this is like the perfect movie to see after that.
Oh, really?
You are going to have to watch the trailer for that. Singing animal movie that's coming out.
Cleverly called Sing.
Yeah.
That movie. I did see that trailer.
Yeah, that looks like I watched it and went.
It looks like a thing.
I was like,
looks like a thing.
Why do we have to be animated animals? Just make this a small town. Make it live action. That I would want to see versus the like. Isn't it funny that this hedgehog is singing a Kanye song? No, it's not funny. Mm. It's dumb.
But kids at day camps and nurseries won't think it's dumb.
If 5-year-olds like it, fine.
Don't worry.
And DVD rewatchability.
Yeah, you'll be bombarded with trailers from now until it's out.
Yeah.
They'll shove it down your throat. So, all right, we have a sponsor, touchofmodern.com this week. Hello. Oh, and I want to mention this, touchofmodern.com. I got my beach little shade/tent. And it's amazing. It fits in this tiny little bag. And we went and used it. And at first, you're like, well, this is too freaking complicated to put together. Like, you know, it's got all these weird, like, poles and stuff. But then once you do it once, you're like, oh, this is easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you put it out and then it's done. And then you pack it back up. It's fantastic. And I only would have found it on touchofmodern.com.
They've got cool stuff. There's a premium folding bike lock, which... I get that, because sometimes I do a lot of bike commuting, so I have a U-lock and blah, 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 and sometimes it gets a little clunky.
Now, what's the difference between the U-lock and this lock, Graham?
Well, a U-lock, Chris, is exactly what it sounds like. It's a U. Mm-hmm. This, though, it's...
For you.
It's for you, sure. Yeah, it's the people's lock.
Yes.
This is just a folding bike lock, meaning you can... it becomes far more compact. The U-lock, a lot of locks, the big chain ones, they're safe. I mean, they protect your bike, but they're big and clunky. And, you know, what do you do with them when you're not, whatever, when you don't, you need it or whatever. This thing looks like you could fold it up and you could lock up a prisoner or something like that. On the bike, whatever you want to do.
Is there a picture of somebody skydiving? Is that?
Well, that's an underwater diving toy they've got called a knot board.
Diving toy?
Yeah. That's there's all kind of watches. There's weird, you know, weed smoking, vapo, whatever, bong looking things. Of course, there's survival knives.
Another survival knife.
There's a stake stone.
Ooh.
So if you're big.
What?
Yeah.
By the way, what?
What's a stake stone?
It's a giant stone that cooks your steak perfectly. Like, you heat up the steak stone and then put the steak on it. I don't know. I don't eat murder.
Yeah.
So it's not for me. But they have UV shoe sanitizers. This place has everything you want. So
I feel like with, like, whiskey stones and now a steak stone that they're just pranking us. Pinterest is pranking us. These are not real things.
It could very much.
Yeah, but you know what? They look nice, don't they? Yeah.
They've got a portable shower, a rinse kit. Now, I've seen these. I've seen many surfers use these. If you're out there camping and you need some surfing.
I don't know. You had me at Stake Stone.
All right. Here's the other thing going on right now. 4 days left. Today is Tuesday, the
23rd.
The 23rd. So you have until the 27th. There's an additional 15% promotional discount on any purchase you make. And of course, if you refer a friend and they buy something, you get $20. It's free to sign up. There's no credit. There's no membership fee.
Nope, nothing like that.
TouchOfModern.com.
TouchOfModern.com. And the other thing is, remember, if you like something, you get it right away because tomorrow it may be different.
Yep.
Ooh.
Because it's kind of like that exclusive club kind of thing. Well, you like it now, but we rotate the products almost every day.
Backpack with a solar panel on it. I was thinking about getting it, and I waited, and it's gone.
Yeah.
Story of my life.
I know. Yeah. Solar-powered backpack, guys.
So, okay, so trailers. So, two trailers. The Arrival. This is the Amy Adams.
Is it The Arrival or just Arrival?
Mm-hmm.
This looks, Arrival. We all watched it.
Yeah, it looks really good.
I'm in.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Amy Adams is Lois Lane, who she communicates with the aliens when everyone's like, no, that's not what you do. And like, and then she takes the reins of the of the military and the diplomats. And this is how I'm going to contact the aliens, which is really cool.
And it's from the same guy who did
Prisoners.
Sicario.
Yeah.
Dennis. Both great movies. I mean,
Villeneuve.
But Sicario is still like
it's really well shot.
It's one of the most underrated films that came out in 2015.
Yeah,
it might have been.
I had a problem with the structure of the movie, but I thought it was shot well and acted well. I felt like it was the first act of a movie.
Yeah,
I felt like, well, what happens next?
I kind of like that the aspect of Sicario because it was very much saying.
It was all set up. This is what's going on.
It's basically just going, hey, drug problem, not easy fixing.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And I think that added to the tension of, like, you know, that it didn't have that traditional three-act structure of, like, and now the denouement.
We got the bad guy. The drug problem's over.
No, yeah. like,
well, that's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see the drug problem be over.
And that's the end of that. It's just like, yeah, bitch, you can go into your apartment and, like, never relax. Like, there's always some shit. Oh, the guy you think is your friend, you know, is just like, so I thought it was great.
So I definitely enjoyed the Arrival trailer. I'm looking forward to the film. What I like about it, too, is it almost takes like a Carl Sagan approach of like, how would aliens initiate first contact here? And what would they do and how would we communicate with them? And it kind of has those that kind of feel to it, like if like Contact. If you remember that movie, it was like, all right, well, they gave us all this information via math, which is a universal language, which like it felt like it had like touches like that. Like, well, if this really was going to happen, here's the way it might.
I like to, we see a little bit in the trailer what the aliens kind of, we don't see them full, what they look like, but it's not this depiction that we've seen sort of the Independence Day bug aliens, the movie type thing coming down that wants to shoot us or whatever. Mm-hmm. We're seeing something that's like, completely
or
different.
Or even like the abyss.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Made me think about it a little bit. Yeah, I think that that's probably, if it's going to happen, it's probably going to be more realistic in that way than like, you know, some like bald skulled alien being like, what's up?
Yeah, yeah. And it also shows, like, the trailer shows a glimpse into how this world, how there's going to be people are going to lose their shit.
Yeah, right. Across the entire planet.
And some people are going to, some governments are going to overreact and say, you know, like, some people are going to go, oh, there's going to be everyone, like, the pretense of our mortality and this planet and being floating through the galaxy, any of that, that's gone. Any, like, well, I'll deal with that later. Yeah, or death is this sort of thing. I don't.
Religion is tested.
Science. Everything. Yeah. Like everything that you thought you knew from whatever background you came from, guess what?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all filtering through their own, like, the cultural beliefs of all these different countries. And yeah, in the trailer.
It looks. I'm pumped. It's in November. I bet you it's going to get it. It looks like it's this. It might be like an Oscar push, whether releasing in November, which I'm fired up for.
We should do this trailer for the live show and get Will Wheaton's reaction.
Yes. All right, we'll do that.
Okay. Bad Santa 2 is the next one. This trailer did make me laugh. I liked the first one. I like Billy Bob Thornton in this role because you look at him and you think, you know what? he really could be that much of an asshole. I kind of see
that normally.
Yeah, I think Billy Bob Thornton is off the reservation. This is really believable to me, the way he's acting, and it looks really funny. It made me laugh, so I'm looking forward to this one.
My reaction to this trailer, I would like to quote an anecdote from Bill Hader when he was on Saturday Night Live, and he was portraying Vincent Price in a sketch, and Lorne Michaels approached him and said, "Bill, why now? That's my thought on Bad Santa 2. Why now?" I get that we are checking in with the kid and he's all grown up and that's fun, but I'm not folding my arms and going, no. I'm just curious. Why now?
You know, that's got to be in the studio notes somewhere. The PR notes.
I think this movie is going to test everybody's beliefs.
This is going to be the one. We are taking back Christmas. We've had enough of this bullshit.
So there's two. There's this one and the other Christmas party one that we talked about.
Yes. Oh, I would love it if Kirk Cameron had a cameo in this movie. That would be great. Yeah. It'd be worth $1 million. To put him in a movie.
So the Christmas party trailer, just one quick thought on it. So there's this weird trend happening right now with films like Neighbors and with this Christmas party trailer where they're showing this one gag that is that I feel like a lot of people think is really funny enough to put in all of these trailers, but it loses it for me.
Kevin James falling over?
Well, pretty much. I mean, no, but in Neighbors, it was the airbag gag where Seth Rogen was just pushed through the ceiling like a cartoon character. And you see a similar thing in this trailer for the office party that, you know, I forget which character, like, just slams down. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's very obviously special effects.
Yeah.
And everybody reacts like, "Whoa, that's going to leave a mark." I don't understand why we're going to this well, and it also looks really expensive.
Yeah.
So I'm just like,
slapstick sells.
But I would like more practical slapstick. I feel like when it's like a human being bouncing, it's just like, it's so unbelievable.
I would like to see someone do that in a comedy movie and then go, "Oh, zoinks! Oh, he's dead," because no human body could survive
that.
That's the kind of comedy I like. I like to get a dose of realism into it. Yeah, we'll call that "Oh, he's dead" comedy.
Yeah.
Now you've got a glimpse into the kind of specs I write.
Yeah. All right, coming out on DVD.
The Huntsman, Winter's War. I would have loved to have seen this pitch. Well, it's for people who liked Frozen but wanted to see it live action and dumber.
Mike, is this what Julia said? Why not? Why are we making more Huntsman movies?
I know.
You know, and like, well, we got some money left in the effects budget. We have enough probably to make another movie. It's, you know, we'll just, you know, do a search and replace on the script and we'll just do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. For those who.
We have all these assets already in the computer.
Why
are they going to go to waste?
That's a really solid sell. I'm an executive at a big studio, and I'm telling you yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a total numbers movie. And also, specifically for people that weren't paying attention to any tabloid during the time of, like, the first release with the Kristen Stewart scandal, I feel.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, let's just make another movie to push the media cycle out.
Right.
You guys don't associate this beloved franchise with an adulterer.
Yeah. Well, it looks like it worked.
No one's talking about
buckle up.
She went after a married man.
Yeah. The Nice Guys. And did you end up seeing this movie?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Oh, that's right. I remember you talking about it.
Did you not like it?
I did like it.
But you weren't overly thrilled.
There were some scenes in it. I remember going, there was some really cool stuff in it. And then there was some stuff that I just got annoying.
Mm.
But, like, it is worth a, like, DVD, watch online type movie sort of have on in the background. There are some interesting... I mean, these are two actors I like.
Yeah.
But it's not like, that was awesome. Like, this is their, you know, whatever. This is their... I can't even think of
it. Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon.
Was it Shane Black who directed it?
That's a great question.
It was somebody.
It was...
Yeah, it was some guy. Some guy who does action movies.
And Ryan Gosling. And Shane Black didn't
direct. Boom!
Yeah, you got it. You nailed it.
Shane Blacked it. I had a great experience watching this movie. I saw it at the Cinerama Dome.
Oh.
So it was very nice. And, you know, sometimes that could amp up your movie experience from being, you know, pretty all right to, like, pretty good. So Who's to say? I enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff in it.
Sounds like it's a good DVD plane movie.
I think so.
It's a great DVD plane movie. Yeah. Oh my God, will it get you through a flight?
Oh my God. Oh, save it for New York. Save it for LAX to JFK, baby. That is a good... Do that and then do Huntsman Winter's War, and that's 5 hours right there.
Yeah, yeah. You'll probably sleep through the back half of Huntsman.
Oh, you'll be fine.
Start with the nice guys.
You'll land refreshed.
Yeah, you'll wake up and you're in New York. Yeah. Have fun in the Big Apple, guys. Yeah.
Now, Ratchet and Clank, this is the movie, if you're familiar with the game, I think that's the only people that went to see this movie. My kids are interested. I will definitely be renting this because it was only out in the movie theater for a weekend, I think.
So disappointed this wasn't a buddy cop movie. Ratchet Clank!
It kind of is, in a way, because it's Ratchet, he's the Lombax with the long ears, and Clank is the little robot strapped to his back, and they have that buddy cop banter, that, like, in the game. But it's a kid's movie. But what I always liked about it, the game has this sense of humor to it. All the guns are completely overpowered. Stuff blows up all the time. It was almost like a RoboCop sensibility for kids, the way, like, everything's overly violent and ridiculous. Uh-huh. So, but, yeah, and it looks like the movie is just the game, like a cutscene from the game, just the entire thing. So, looks like another, this is a very specific audience. It's a good movie to see on DVD if you have children and they've played the game. So there. If you fit all those marks,
four people listening to this that fall into that category.
You will enjoy it, I'm sure. So, but we'll be checking it out. Now, on the site Spotlight and fan feedback, more weekly film news, check it out. Rick Meyer's review of Sausage Party, if you want a differing opinion on the movie, where he gets into religious aspect to it. He liked it. And what's interesting is Rick is actually usually very critical. Uh-huh. But he said he liked animation and he kind of liked it. He liked what they did with it. So
I was surprised there were a lot of positive responses
from
critics.
Yeah. A differing opinion is on the site. And also, I was saying too, we've gotten some really cool feedback on some. On some of the other episodes, and occasionally posting on the Facebook site, there's images from my graphic novel, Long Ago and Far Away. The artist has been putting some stuff into Instagram, and then we've been reposting. It's been coming along fantastically, if you want to check that out. And also, like we say, check out the Facebook and Twitter feeds, like them, subscribe to them, because that all those numbers helps for sure, and it's a free thing you can do to help the show.
Yeah, and just reading some of your responses. So we posted this little nighttime reading with the kids. There's some like kids animated Han shooting first thing.
A little golden book. Yeah, Lord Corette sent that over,
which is really cool. And then Brad Mills posts, "This has always bothered me. Han didn't shoot first. Han shot only." Only is in all caps. So Brad, thank you so much for your nerd rage. We appreciate that. Thank you guys you guys are really, we love the responses, especially like on the Facebook pages to all this stuff. It's really cool. All right. What's coming out?
Don't Breathe. This is a horror film, although it's been getting positive buzz. People are saying this one's pretty scary and pretty good. So I don't know too much about it right now. I think it's about a heist gone wrong. in a old person's house that some young people went to go rob it and didn't work out so well.
Well, a group of friends break into the house of a wealthy blind man thinking they'll get away with the perfect heist. They're wrong.
Oh boy.
Sounds like Blind Guy's a little Saw-ish.
Ooh. Yes. Mechanic Resurrection, Jason Statham coming back to the franchise.
Does he again?
The Mechanic franchise?
Yeah.
That's different than the Transporter?
Yeah, these are two.
What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
That is a trick question.
Is it part of the same universe?
No, yeah, but it is creatively.
That's crazy to me. That is my mind is so blown right now.
It's like there's a Ratchet and Clank movie, and then there's a Clank and Ratchet movie coming out. Like, there's no goddamn difference in either one of these things.
Yeah. I saw this trailer.
One has a car.
Yeah.
That's it.
This trailer played before Sausage Party. And
same audience.
Shout out to Sausage Party. At the Burbank AMC, go see it. And I was so confused because I not recalled hearing about the first Mechanic movie, and then I was wondering if it was a part of the Transporter. And also, as an actor, to just be like, I'm just going to play literally the same character
in over everything and over. I do.
Though right. when he made fun of that in Spy, it was fantastic.
Right.
Yeah.
Flexible sport suits that I can kick people in.
Right.
Yes. That should be the title. I want to see that on a poster in yep. a smart font.
I like, too, how it's like mechanic colon resurrection. Like, it's a very dramatic title. It's like no, we're taking this very seriously.
I love that yes. trend in sequel titles, yeah. though. Rise of the Machines. Right. You know, yeah. it's so good.
Son Resurgence. Of. Son yeah. of. Son of.
Yeah, it's so good.
But resurrect mechanic beneath yeah. the resurrection.
Right.
I feel like the colon is like a more modern invention of sequel naming. I feel like Son of was more 50s, right. 60s, but this is like part blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like, this is for real.
And the next movie is Greater. This is the story of Brandon Burlesworth, possibly the greatest walk-on in the history of college football. And the next one is Sea of Trees. And this is...
Wait a minute now.
Oh,
I'm
go ahead.
I'm going to go see Greater.
Okay, go ahead.
Because it's a football movie.
That's fine.
That's why I'm going to see Sully.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Movie.
Yeah.
Got to support my boy.
I'm going
to
see this because I'm sure it will have every beat that every football movie has ever had.
And that's what you want.
And I'm going to love it.
That's what you want.
Excellent.
And I love that they're releasing it right before
now,
the
do you know
NFL
what,
starts.
what made it the greatest walk-on?
You know, he... Basically, he's this kid that...
like better than Rudy's walk-on. That's just I'm asking.
What is a walk-on?
Great question, Julie.
I'm not asking for me. I'm asking for the listeners.
Yeah.
So in Division I athletic, and especially in football, they're given a certain amount of scholarships. I don't know what, but let's say it's a 50 guy team, and there's a certain number of our scholarship mm-hmm. athletes. Walk-on is somebody who just came and tried out.
Okay.
So. For you to try out and make it, most like I played high school football, so I knew guys that walked on, and you're dog food. I mean, you're just like you're a blocking dummy. They just use you, they just walk all over you. That's what the movie Rudy shows. That's who Rudy was, and he never played, never got in a game. He got in the last play of the last game of his senior year. That's the whole story. Spoiler alert, Rudy. So that's why.
And he was small.
And so, people stood and clapped for him, I think.
Right. Well, they slow clapped.
They slow clapped.
Come on, you got the sports movie.
Sorry. Anyway, continue.
Just like Lucas. So what makes him the greatest, I'm sure people will go online and argue this point, is he walked on, became a starter at a Division I school, and then was drafted. He was like a first-round draft pick in the NFL.
Mm.
That never happens. That's right. The point why it's like you can walk on. Usually the guys that walk on, they get a job in the special teams because they're really fast, but they're not big enough or whatever. So he was his story was he had some crazy growth spurt between like junior and senior year in high school. So he wasn't he wasn't the biggest eighth grader football player. He was just sort of an okay and then became a giant 6'5" guy or whatever, however big he is. And that's why it's a big story.
Gotcha. Okay.
I'm going to be the only one.
Because of growth. Got it.
Okay. You and it. One other dad.
That was my takeaway from that. He grew, so we got to walk on the field.
That's how sports work.
Yeah, that's how it is. If I would have grown more, I would have
You would have been president.
Yes. That's true. I'm pretty dumb.
the Sea of Trees. Now, this is a baffling movie to me. It's like, how many Japanese suicide forest movies are we going to have?
Right, and just recently there's been quite a number.
And this one has Matthew McConaughey in it.
Whoa,
and a pair of glasses.
Yes.
A suicidal
American befriends a Japanese man lost in a forest near Mount Fuji, and the two search for a way out.
Gus Van Sant. I think this movie got delayed in its release.
It had to have been, because I remember hearing about this before.
We talked about this movie like a year ago.
Right.
And then something happened, and it got lost in the trees.
Right.
It'd be funny if all of the Suicide Forest...
The movie tried to kill itself.
Yeah. That'd be funny, though, if all the Suicide Forest movies were delayed, and it's just the same movie that we're talking about over and over again.
Seems like a lot. I think the one had the girl from Game of Thrones in it, though, the first one. Natalie Dormer, I believe. Sure. But that was, I think that came out earlier this year or last year. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. But it's just weird that there's more than one within a year. I wonder if that's the reason this one got delayed. We're like, well, we can't release two Suicide Forest movies
right.
within, you know, 6 months of each other.
Well, if it's McConaughey and Gus Van Sant, then that sounds like a pretty good
Naomi
lineup.
Watts. I think it's interesting.
Naomi Watts only does good shit.
I know. She doesn't.
Like, she's a very discerning eye. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think she's someone, this is total speculation on my point, but just from what I gather from the work she chooses in the interviews, is that she's like, yeah, I get paid great money. I don't need the crazy stardom. I don't need the, like, TMZ hiding in my trash can stardom.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just...
Which, by the way, no one needs.
Nobody needs. So I'm going to just take these cool little things and enjoy my life, you know, which is what I would do if I was in that spot.
So, all right. So go see Tree of Love or Sea of Trees sea or whatever.
Tree of Life. Go see the Tree of Life. Knock out 4 hours.
So the Sea of Trees. All right. Any other announcements we have? Actually, there's one thing I wanted to mention. I don't know if we mentioned it before. We have some new items in the store. We have the Radio Free GOP shirts. We have all the Crab Feast shirts are now in, although we'll be restocking. We're missing a couple of sizes, but because we're taking over the merchandise, we'll be restocking them soon. But we just might have your size in stock because there's like four different designs, too.
Yeah, the Crab Feast shirts just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Check all that out. So, Julia, where can people find you on the internet, your podcast? What's going down?
Thank you so much for asking. you can find me at Julia Prescott on pretty much all the things, Twitter, Instagram.
But where's the Prescott Hub?
The Prescott Hub. JuliaPrescott.com.
There we go.
A website that hasn't been updated in a little while. and my face. So that's always there. And you can follow my podcast at Simpsons Pod on Twitter, where we post episodes, but also so many screen caps, so many references. Nice. We have fun. And we are also on Facebook. Just search for Everything's Coming Up Podcast.
And see them live at the Los Angeles Podcast Festival, September 23rd through the 25th. Hard tickets and the live pay-per-view are at lapodfest.com. If you buy the pay-per-view, save yourself $5 by using coupon code EVERYTHING. Come see them. It's a cool podcast. One of the things we love doing at the festival every year, we have our we like to keep our core groups of shows we get, and we're always trying to find new shows. We're always trying to find something that's different. And you reached out to me, and I was like, "This is a great. Love this show. This is awesome. It's different. It's what everything that's great about podcasting. Mm-hmm. It's you just went, I love The Simpsons. Let's talk about it, right? Yeah. So let's do this. You know, there's no barrier. There's nobody going to tell us no.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know? We received, I feel like I say this way too often, but I love it. It's the best review that we've received on our podcast. Somebody wrote in and said, sometimes I can hear Julia and Allie wearing glasses. And I don't. We're still not 100% on what that means, but we're like, shine on, sway on, sister.
take it as the compliment it's meant for.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
We were just like, thanks for listening. Thanks for noticing.
So great. See the glasses in person at LA Podcast.
Exactly. You could hear them and see them.
Ooh. Yeah, or watch them on the live stream if you can't come to LA.
Absolutely.
These girls both have glasses.
Yes.
We're both Lisa Simpson, Velma, Scooby-Doo motherfuckers.
Let them prove it. Yeah.
Oh, the words I've been wanting to hear my whole life. God damn this town.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, guys. So, like Chris said, follow us, all the social media. Positive reviews on iTunes, guys. Those always help. If you haven't done that, a 5-star review helps our rankings in their algorithm. And liking us on all the social media helps. And then, of course, as we've said, spend $20 with us once a year, and that keeps us afloat. And if you haven't yet, then buy the live stream. That helps. So that's our program. Anything else?
No, that's it. And our coupon code is CFN.
CFN.
And we have, there are obviously tickets left, but they are going fast. So if you're coming down, get your tickets now.
Do it. All right.
Oh, actually, no, we added Kevin Pollak and Craig Fitzsimmons.
Kevin Pollak and Greg Fitzsimmons have been added to the festival, which is really cool.
Kevin Pollak, who's in War Dogs.
Oh.
And you know what? He's the best part in it.
Of course he
is.
He's so good.
So we're excited to add those guys. We just added them to the festival. And we're going to be announcing the stand-up comedy lineup. That'll be the Saturday night. I think we might slide in an earbud screening. That's
Oh, really?
That might happen.
Okay. All right. Well, keep me posted.
so seriously as if you were discussing Citizen Kane.
We've been talking about it. Yeah. We'll let you know about that.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys for listening to episode 334. Thank you, Julia Prescott.
Thank you.
For coming on a Tuesday.
I love it.
And being on our program.
It's like I'm talking to my Nana.
Yeah. My name's Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first.
No, he shot only.
Prescott.